Hi, welcome to Offscript. I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
Today on the show, Sam Raimi returns with Send Help, the new Rachel McAdams, Dylan O'Brien feature about two co-workers stranded on an island when things go very wrong. Wild feature, R-rated, very excited to talk about it. Sam Raimi is back. We're also going to take a look at The Wrecking Crew. This is a new Amazon Prime movie from Angel Manuel Soto, the director of Blue Beetle, which you saw a couple years ago. He's doing this with Jason Momoa and Dave Bautista. Buddy cop action flick. They're brothers. They're in Hawaii. It's all right. We're going to talk about it. We'll get to that at the end of the show. We're going to talk about some trailers, some stuff coming up. All right. The Devil Wears Prada 2, Michael. We're going to talk about the trailer for The Drama, that new Rob Pattinson Zendaya flick. And before we get to all of it, we need to hit the news. First story this week, Disney has a new CEO. Ooh, boy. If I had applause or something, I guess I'd play it. Who's the guy? Bob Iger's out and we're going to get somebody new in. Who's going to fix everything, Andy? Who is it?
A man named Josh D'Amaro has been named the new CEO. He comes from the Parks and Entertainment division, so that side of the business coming over. We don't really know much about him. None of the articles really said about his philosophy or how he'll steer the ship, other than he's kind of closer with a lot of the creatives and the creative side, so he might work out better than Bob Chapek. So Bob Iger famously retired in 2020, and Bob Chapek took his seat for a couple of years. I think he was going to be the interim, and he did such a bad job, they brought Bob Iger back in 2023 to help shepherd this thing into a new CEO, Josh D'Amaro, and he will take over next month at their next earnings call in the middle of March. So this is happening very, very soon. Lots of big changes, and but we don't really know what direction that will take Disney, but it's a huge job to fill.
Yeah. Another interesting announcement here was the election of Disney Entertainment co-chair Dana Walden to be the new CCO, Chief Creative Officer, and President. This is kind of a split role. A little bit. Like, Josh D'Amaro is definitely still CEO, and I hope with his Parks knowledge he brings a little something back to what they're doing, because right now it's just like, dude, everything just keeps getting more expensive over there, and like families are getting priced out. Maybe he will make some kind of decisions that way, probably not. But Dana Walden taking over for creative is kind of a split position thing. Apparently this is coming from an executive over on the board who came from Morgan Stanley, who had a lot of success with promoting two people, kind of up into similar positions. Think of a little bit like what DC's doing with James Gunn. Like, it's kind of one of two positions and he's running things. I don't know. I think that's smart. I keep hearing that that's actually a really good move on the film and TV side. Neither of them are going to have any control. Well, I guess our Disney CEO will, Josh D'Amaro, but Dana Walden will have nothing to do with ESPN. That is still kind of on a sports island. Like, the Disney still owns that, obviously, and they're still doing their thing, but like, apparently they've got their own execs and things run over there by themselves. As for D'Amaro coming in, I don't know, man. I don't really know a lot about the guy. I wish I could say more here. Hollywood Reporter gives us a bit. I know he's been in the parks a long time. I know he started at Disneyland Resort as like a basic role and worked his way all the way up. This has been his career thing for 30 years. I know when Chapek was around and things were going kind of south, there was some talk of this guy about Josh D'Amaro might have done things differently, you know? So he's been kind of the front runner following Chapek for a minute. Can't say what it means for Disney. I did hear, for what it's worth, he's a Muppet fan, apparently, and really didn't want the Muppets to shut down and was a part of the Muppets getting moved from their little Muppet vision to Rock and Roller Coaster. So good news for Muppets, right? Maybe we'll get a Muppet original series or something. Other than that, I don't know a lot about the guy creatively.
Yeah, like I said, it's a mystery, and the big thing is that Disney's content machine fuels everything else. It fuels the parks, fuels the merchandise, fuels a lot. It shapes culture. You know, that's one of the big things that Disney has for a long time had the kind of the stranglehold on, and that's been co-opted by a lot of other industries and studios. So it'll be interesting to see probably that first investor call next month. That's usually when they announce new projects and things like that. We'll probably get a better idea of what Josh D'Amaro has in mind.
Yeah. Bob Iger will be out in March, as I understand it, very soon. We knew it was going to be sometime this year, but yeah, this is like within 30 days. This is immediate. This is happening very quickly. And then our guy is going to be in. So I don't know if we'll get a flashback to 2020 when Bob Chapek was taking things, but you know, we'll see. We'll find out. together. And keep your eye on Offscript for more. Next story, Fast and Furious has a new title and release date. Oh my God, I can't believe it, Andy. How did this get announced? What are we looking at? What's happening with Fast and Furious?
I kept seeing people post The Last in the Furious, which is a brilliant title. That's not the title. It will be titled Fast Forever, and it will come out March 17th, 2028. So a full 2 year, a little over 2 years away. It's finally happening. Vin Diesel's been trying to force this to happen, to be like, the fans really want this. But we never had a studio announcement, but we finally do have an official announcement from Universal saying, hey, yes, we're going to put this out, Fast Forever 2028. It's happening. And I can't believe it. It will be 5 years, 5 years from the previous one, Fast X, which ended on a cliffhanger. Vin Diesel will be 61 when this movie comes out, and it will means he's filming it now when he's 59, 60. Man, I'm glad it's actually happening. Yeah, I'm glad it's actually happening because I do kind of have a soft spot for these ridiculous movies. One of the things that Universal had said, though, when they were negotiating all this, is that they were trying to get the budget down, which meant cutting salaries, cutting effects, getting it way down, which means they probably achieved all that, but they were looking to cut like $100-150 million from the budget. The last one was super expensive, so it will be a much different movie, I think.
Yeah, let's remember last year when Vin Diesel went to Fuel Fest, an automotive event, and announced that the next movie would feature a return to the car culture, to street racing, and also a return for Paul Walker's character. And he said, that's what you're going to get in the finale, right? It'll be smaller, it'll be down to earth in LA. And for what it's worth, that's where the series should go. It is in such a strange place where they're like, spies, and 2019 had like Hobbs and Shaw, the spinoff, with just its own like spy culture thing with Jason Statham and The Rock, and like it absolutely should wind down a little bit, especially considering that's where the series started, right? I don't think you bring Paul Walker back. Just act like Vin didn't say that. I think let's just act like that never happened. Yeah, and you're right. Like, way cut the budget down. Vin Diesel should not get $20 million for this movie. I don't care. That's ridiculous. You know what I mean? Like, my man should be paid a modest like five. And if he doesn't want it, they can leave him out too. You know what I mean? Get it over the finish line. It's fine. And also open the next movie with like the Avengers Endgame 5 years later title card, I think, right? Like that's the way you do it. You do a time jump to cover where we've been for 5 years, and we just catch people up, and it's like, well, ever since that crazy fateful day at the end of the last movie, I've been working in my mechanic shop, and now I have to come out of retirement one last time. That would be the move, I think. What do you think? How do they cover this?
Well, so again, it ends on a cliffhanger, one of whom they put John Cena on babysitting duty. He's like he's like doing a road trip with a young kid in his car. And so like the movie has to pick up from there. That kid's going to be 5 years, 6 years older from the last time. So there's going to be a lot of those issues. I don't remember all the plot threads. The first movie made $750 million and was considered a disappointment because it was so expensive. And the previous film before that had made $1.5 billion. So it was an underperformance by those standards. Really kind of weirdly insensitive. So Vin Diesel posted a picture of him and Paul Walker and was like, you know, the road, they never said the road would be easy. I was like, come on, man. He's been dead for over a decade. Could you just stop exploiting it?
Dude. Yeah.
So it's just like,
yeah, okay.
But it's happening. It's just going to be interesting. Like, this franchise is nearly 30 years old. I remember seeing the original in the theater way back in 2000. You got to wrap it up. It'll be interesting to see who does and doesn't come back, because they're not going to have the budget for everyone.
I can't believe he's going to be in his 60s, dude. That's crazy. Yeah, man. New Fast and Furious coming 2028, right? Fast Forever. Keep it here for more. I really quickly, this isn't much of a story. I wanted to talk about these Beatles photos. I told Andy I want to talk about the Beatles photos. And like, it shouldn't be for like effective bullying, but I worry that's kind of what it is. But I pulled these up. So earlier this week, we got four photos of our Beatles from our, well, hold on. What am I doing? I throw to Andy on these things. Andy, help me out. Dig me out of this hole. Help set up some context for what's about to happen.
So we have this huge Beatles movie that's coming out in, I think, 2028, which is going to be four Beatles biopics, one of each member of them. And we got a teaser of some photos, which was really annoying to me because it was like a photo of a photo of a photo on Instagram that was real fuzzy. You couldn't really see anything. And then like a couple of days later, they finally have like some official stills, and the stills look amazing. Like Paul Mescal disappears. Like it just looks like Paul McCartney. Same thing with everyone else. Joseph Quinn. Gosh, I forget the other.
Barry Keoghan.
Barry Keoghan.
George MacKay, right?
Harris Dickinson.
Harris Dickinson, yeah. Not George MacKay. Good God.
So these images come out and they look incredible. I was like, man. And then we see some real photos, a little bit more less touched up. And man, they look bad. Like I was like, these are not, like we have the Beatles at home. Like that's what this looks like. Not very convincing to me. They need to drop something else. Like the I'm laughing at these photos. It's rough, man. Like you're not convincing anyone. I don't know if they're doing de-aging. I don't know if they're just doing a lot of effects, but like those photos are so touched up.
Yeah, man. Like, yeah, these were postcards that they left at like the Liverpool Institute, which apparently is like a school that Paul McCartney helped found. That's the reason we were seeing like photos of photos on Instagram, because people were finding them and then posting them. Like, look it, I found one of these. They put these postcards at a couple other key Beatles spots as well around the globe. One that is set in like New York or something. So people found them and post them like a little treasure hunt. And yeah, these like four original ones that they released are like, you know, pretty strong for what it is. The worst looking of them, I think, is our John Lennon. What's his name again? Not Harris Dickinson. George McKay.
Barry Keoghan.
George McKay.
George Harrison.
This kid? No. The guy playing John Lennon.
Harris Dickinson.
It is Harris Dickinson. Excuse me. I'm confusing him for George McKay. Harris Dickinson is John Lennon. It's probably the worst looking one. Joseph Quinn definitely just looks like Joseph Quinn in a wig. Barry Keoghan looks fine. But like notably, Paul Mescal, I think, as Paul McCartney, who's kind of, I don't want to say the de facto Beatle, but like obviously one of the more important songwriters of the four. Like, looks pretty good. They've got this like underground shot. He's playing a concert. Like, he's like solid. And then, yeah, you see the actual photo like TMZ got. You're like, oh God. They look like they're in bad wigs from Spirit Halloween. Like, oh no. I'm glad we're able to talk about these and pull these up on the show. Like, it's fine. Like, I'm a movie magic. They will touch them up. They will have lighting. It will be different. They won't be grainy like these photos. Like, I get it. They will be their own thing. Maybe for these segments, like they might even de-age them a little bit because they could use it. But like, man, they really just put out these four photos earlier this week that were like, these look so good. And like 3 days later, Twitter gets washed with like, oh boy, set photos looked totally different. And it doesn't inject a lot of confidence into a four film cinematic event for four movies that are all supposed to come out next April in 1 month. Like, I don't even... It just seems baffling. And like, I want to have confidence. I feel like Sony should be able to step in and do different things at the movies. I see that, right? But also, man, like, just four movies on the Beatles in 1 month just is not... It just seems like a weird move, and nobody's really explained the logic of it to me yet.
Yeah, it would make sense. Again, it should have gone straight to streaming. This would have been... This is basically a series... 4 2-hour episodes, I guess.
Yeah.
It's really unclear what the release strategy is going to be. I think it's going to be a bomb. I think there can't be that much Beatles interest to see four biopics in 1 month. But we'll have to wait and see. I think that's in spring 2028.
Yeah. I tell you what, we're going to talk about the Michael trailer here in our trailer park segment after Send Help. And man, I don't know how that movie's going to do at the box office. YouTube comments would lead me to believe it's going to do really well. But like... I don't know. Music biopics are in a weird place. Anyway, speaking of the box office, one more story this week. Let's talk numbers. The Melania doc is out. Boy, why didn't we cover that on the podcast, Andy? Man, that would have been... It's got a 99% audience score on Rotten. Everybody loves it.
Incredible week at the box office. It's actually been a good January. Usually January movies can be real in the doldrums, but number one was Send Help, which we'll be reviewing here shortly. Came in at 20 million domestically, 28 million globally. Really strong start for this movie. I think it had about a $40 million budget. It'll make that back definitely. So good start for that. Iron Lung. So this is another big story. So this is the independent movie by the streamer Markiplier, based on his video game, I believe. Totally made and distributed by himself, made for like $3 million, made $17.8 million. It's a huge story because it's made, you know, so much from... We're going to be getting all these streamer movies now because of this. I'm convinced. I know. As well. Yeah. 21 million globally for that, for this little kind of indie movie that could. And then, yes, at number three is the Melania documentary, most expensive documentary in history. Amazon spent $75 million between acquiring the rights and marketing, distribution, all that, made $7 million, which was more than anticipated. They were anticipating $2 to $3 million. It made more than double that. How much of that is... There's been some nefarious musings about the money behind this movie, but we're not going to get into that. But the movie did do better than anticipated. It has a 99% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's definitely bought and paid for. Never trust
it's a bribe. Sorry. Yeah, no, you're right. I'm not going to get into it. It's fine. Yeah, no, you can talk about Melania on their own. Go ahead. Yeah.
I was going to say that. So the rights were acquired for, I think, $40 million paid to Melania Trump's production company. And then, like I said, Amazon spent another $25 million on marketing, distribution, all that. So like I said, incredibly expensive to do. That's going to be a positive thing for them in their regulatory endeavors, for sure.
Yeah. I just leave Melania on the table, man. I don't have any interest in it. We don't watch a lot of docs already for the show, but come on. Jason Statham, real quick, while I'm thinking about it. I don't know for sure. I don't have firm numbers on this, but for Beekeeper, he got like $20 million, which is nuts. Like, just for comparison, and Beekeeper was a couple years ago now, but the idea is that Shelter, he's probably making a similar amount of money or something close to it. Wow. He commands a real big paycheck, and the budget for Shelter was 50. So even if he's taking a cut off what he made in Beekeeper, like, I'd say he's probably still asking for something around $15 to $20 million, like, which is, you know, a third of the budget for that damn movie. To compare, Timothy Chalamet from Marty Supreme is expected to have made around $25 million, and that's like hottest kid in acting coming up, Best Picture nominee stuff. You know what I mean? So like, I don't know. Statham, I think, like Vin Diesel's in this funny place where he's an action star who just commands an insane paycheck. And if you can afford it, he only does like one or two projects a year. And that's where he's at in Shelter. Bummer it underperformed. But man, I didn't think Beekeeper was going to be anything interesting. And at least that one had a bit of like a satirical spin on like the action formula. Like they're doing something a little bit smarter in that movie. Like, I think Shelter is just like a straightforward Statham action vehicle that just ain't doing it. So I don't know. I think that movie's, I don't know.
I get his movies confused for sure. Yeah. I thought he had a movie called Black Bear coming out, which that's what I thought this was. So I was like, what is Shelter? But, So Jason Statham at the bottom of the top five with $5.5 million, $13 million, worldwide. Yeah. The time of some of these stars is fading. Like, Vin Diesel will probably not get a $20 million payday for the second movie because the previous one just didn't perform the way everyone's budgets probably have to cut. Also, he hasn't worked in a while. He's tried to get all his other franchises back going, like Riddick and some other projects. He's just like, please, I need to work. So he's probably taking a bit of a pay cut here. Also, number four was Zootopia 2 with another $5.8 million. $1.77 billion continues to do well. It's been in theater since like November.
Yeah, and getting a 9% bump from last week because the weather. Like, all these theaters were closed, so Zootopia 2 did better in week 10 than it did in week 9. Small world, man. One more thing about Iron Lung. Somebody asked us to cover that for the show, and Andy and I had kind of talked about it. Neither of us are fans. Like, I don't want to say neither of us are fans. Neither of us know anything about Markiplier. I don't know anything about him. I know a little bit about the game, but like, between that and what I don't know about it, I just figured it's kind of like Chris Stuckman, Shelby Oaks territory, right? Like, he's a YouTuber who's made a thing that is probably cool, and I don't know if it blows up and makes a big impact, I'll definitely take a peek. But otherwise, like, I don't know. $20 million is a big impact, I guess. I don't know. I just like Shelby Oaks, I'm kind of interested, but not enough for me to like go buy a ticket. That's all.
I've heard mixed reviews. I heard some people really liked it. I've heard some people say it's the worst thing they've ever seen. It is a little bit of a bottle film, I think. I guess it's based on a game where you're in a submarine.
Yes, it's a single location game. Yes, you're locked in a thing. Yeah, the whole time.
So the movie is the same. It's a single location. You're locked in the submarine in the movie. And the movie's 2 hours long. That's
some flashbacks. If it had been 90
minutes, I might have checked it out, but I'm not doing 2 hours of this. So
yeah,
but still, huge amount of money made.
Yeah, I think we covered the trailer on the pod. I remember just thinking like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, like just like Shelby Oaks, like it's probably a really cool project, but I'm not a fan and I just am not plugged in the way that I'm like looking forward to going and seeing it. That's all. But one of these, like you said, I think more will come. I think more YouTubers will make stuff. With the success of this movie, I'll bet more of them get theater placement and one of these things will pop for sure. And I think will be something to talk about. I mean, God, we talked about Skinamarink, right? And that's like low key what that was. Raka Raka, right? Made, Talk to Me and Bring Her Back.
Bring
like
her
they're
back.
Off of YouTube. Yeah. So like, no, there is a space for this for sure. That's Iron Lung. Yeah. We got to talk about movies. Oh my God. We got to talk about Send Help. I spent way too long on news. Andy's going to be taking the summary on this. So let me get out of his way. Andy, please take it away.
Send Help. So this is the latest horror thriller survival feature from legendary director Sam Raimi, who of course did The Evil Dead, the Spider-Man films, Doctor Strange 2, Multiverse of Madness. So that may have actually been his last film. So here comes an original property, though, starring Rachel McAdams and Dylan O'Brien. Rachel McAdams plays Linda Little, an accountant at this big corporate firm who doesn't really fit in. They did a She's All That with her where she's really nerdy. She dresses really frumpy in like these big sweaters and like a big skirt. It's kind of dresses like a grandmother, really out of place. And it's socially awkward. Doesn't understand the social cues of corporate business. She is up for promotions, really excited about it. When Dylan O'Brien enters the picture, he is the son of the late CEO, and he decides, you know, I don't think she doesn't really have what we're looking for. We're looking for a people person. So he hires someone else who plays golf with regularly, a very like sexist kind of setup. Linda makes a fuss about it and he says, hey, why don't you come with us on this business trip? You can figure out Appendix D and, you know, we'll see if you really have what it takes. And so they're flying across the Indian Ocean on this business trip. The plane is struck by lightning. There's a plane crash. They are washed ashore of this desert island. He is injured. Dylan O'Brien's character, his leg isn't broken, but he's got a big gash that he's, you know, can't move around. And it turns out that Rachel McAdams, Linda Little, is a big fan of Survivor, the TV show, the reality show, and is an amateur survivalist herself. She knows how to build a shelter, how to start fire, how to look for food, this sort of thing. And that's what she launches into survival mode, keeps them both alive. But Dylan O'Brien is like trying to boss her around, tell her what to do. He's like, hey, you need to be doing this. Why are you wasting time? And then it very clearly becomes, hey, I don't work for you, and you have to depend on me. So their roles are somewhat reversed. And they have to work together, work against each other. Some, they have different motivations and both characters are maybe not everything that they seem to be. So that's our setup. Zach, what'd you think?
I really like Send Help. But I'm a bit of a Raimi fan, so I feel like I'm biased. And like a lot of what I like about this movie is a lot of the historic stuff that he brings to it, little nods to his previous career. You know, a Bruce Campbell appearance, familiar camera moves, like the Evil Dead tracking shot through the woods. Like a lot of that stuff I really go for. And watching Send Help in theaters, I can't help but wonder if like the people down the aisle from me notice or care about any of that stuff. So leaving that stuff aside, I think Send Help is really simple. It's like a $40 million horror film. It's a cheap shoot. Sam knows how to run on a cheap budget. It made most of its money back this weekend. Like, so I think it'll be a profitable joint. It's his first R-rated feature since like 2000, and it's his first horror movie since 2009 with Drag Me to Hell. So it's a return to form for the horror master. I think Rachel McAdams rocks in this movie. I think Dylan O'Brien rocks in this movie. I had a great time watching this movie. I think it's funny. I think it's weird and messed up. It's gory. Like, I like Send Help a lot, but I don't think it's for everybody, for sure. What'd you think?
And I really enjoyed it too. It's surprisingly really, really funny. Like, these two, they don't, they have like anti-chemistry because they don't like each other. Like he thinks Linda's like a nerd, basically. She's not cool. She's not a lot personal. She doesn't play golf, all these things. She can't stand him because he's like a chauvinist pig. So they don't like each other, but they have to try and work together. They have different motivations. And also, it reminded me of things like Triangle of Sadness has a similar setup where, you know, this rich yacht crash lands on an island, and then the people who know how to actually do stuff are now in charge, and the rich people are kind of, you know, rolled to reverse because their money is worthless in this situation. So we get a little bit of that. It, like I said, the performances are really good. I've never seen Rachel McAdams do this sort of thing. Like she gets some really intense moments, some real like she has to fight a boar. This like gets covered in blood a whole lot. Like Sam Raimi loves to do those kinds of really wet movies where his actors getting covered in goo and whatnot. And I think the big surprise is that Dylan O'Brien gets some really great scenes too. He gets to like really flex his acting chops as well. I thought it was going to really be a Rachel McAdams vehicle, but they both are really putting in 110%.
Yeah, this is Raimi's second collaboration with McAdams. She did Doctor Strange and Multiverse of Madness, and apparently when they were working on that set, they just really got along. He'd be like, hey, can you scream real big for me? She's like, sure, and like loves a scream queen. She puts it out, and he's like, okay, like I got somebody I can work with here. So it was somewhere in the production of that they started talking about this movie. This script came along in 2019 from two writing partners named Mike Swift and Damian Shannon, who wrote just a few movies. Freddy vs. Jason, which is not a very good, well-written movie. Friday the 13th, 2009 remake, which is also not a very good written movie. And Baywatch, 2017, like which is not, I don't think, particularly compelling. And then this. So they've written four films together, and this one's quite a bit different from them. But it seems to be very Raimi, like, regardless. It's parts Misery, it's Castaway, it's a lot of the television show Survivor. And like you said, people have already compared it to Ruben Östlund's Triangle of Sadness. But it's the ultimate workplace power fantasy. That's what I like about Send Help. It is like the imaginary argument you have in your head when you're driving home from work after you got in a fight with your boss. And you're like, God, if only I could say this to him. You know what I mean? Oh, if only the tables were turned and I had the opportunity to show them what I'm really capable of and who I really could be. And that's exactly what Linda Little gets, right? Like, she is a Survivor fanatic. Her apartment is covered in books about how to tie knots and how to make fire and how to survive out in the wilderness. And when the tables are turned and her boss is powerless and she's the one with all the power, it's everything she could want. Like, her skin is glowing. Rachel McAdams is like doing great on the island. Oh my God. Everything is perfect. And meanwhile, Bradley, her boss, is like, just like he's fuming mad and trying to hide it because he hates her so much. He hates everything about Linda Little. He can't stand her. He hates the way she looks, and she hates the way she smells. And so the two of them like start to develop this relationship that is like so oddly shaped. You know, they don't like they very clearly don't really like one another, you know? And like Linda tries to be understanding, but also like this is the guy who has been making her miserable. Like the first act of the movie is just teeing her up as a punching bag. Like, you just feel so bad for her.
Yeah. Oh,
she's doing God. Like, she's doing, like, Rachel McAdams is doing like Tim Robinson at The Office, like awkward bits where nobody laughs and like no one's into it. And she's in her car crying and like trying to be like, you can do it, Linda. Like, just get through another day. And like, God, Dylan O'Brien is so great. It's like this huge douchebag boss. He's really good at it, honestly. Like, I haven't seen a lot of Dylan O'Brien performances, but like, he's excellent in this movie. They're both fantastic.
Yeah, like I said, the performances are really good, and their relationship kind of flows and changes. Like, they're really at each other initially, then they kind of start working together. You get a hint like we're going to do an enemies to lovers, but then it goes in a different direction. There's a lot of things like you don't expect. And like I said, it's a good time. The entire time, it's just, there were so many like laugh out loud moments and a lot of gross out moments, too. A lot of stuff that'll make you go like, oh, geez, both in terms of like some body horror, some pain, some gross stuff, concerning survival. And then just, yeah, this very antagonistic, relationship. At one point, you know, he really wants to make efforts to get off the island, and Linda's just kind of enjoying herself a little bit too much. Doesn't want to rush getting off.
Yeah, no, it's too good here. She's like, why would you want to leave, Bradley? Like, look at our lives. Like, I have, like, this amazing hut, and he sleeps in, like, some leaves. Like, just leaned over a palm tree, like in this little hutch, and she's got like this whole thing, and like she has their only weapon for a while. She has a knife that washed up on shore, and so there's a bit of a power dynamic there. I love a lot of the new stuff Raimi is whipping out here. He does this thing with macro lenses really early in the movie when Bradley first meets Linda at the office, and she's got a bit of like tuna fish on her lip, and it cuts to this like insane close-up shot on Dylan O'Brien's eye and then like the tuna, and like if that you see that a bit more as things get zany on our island and start to get bloody. Like there's this boar hunting sequence. It's fantastic. They're just throwing buckets of fake blood on Rachel McAdams. And like in multiple takes, she's spitting it out. She'll be screaming, ah, and then have to stop and spit out blood just because it's all over her. Like really gory, really aggressive. I love that the performances go over the top, both of them. Like they both understand the assignment. I'm working with Sam Raimi. He wants some zany line deliveries. I was watching some interviews from the pressers afterwards and Dylan O'Brien was talking about like even wackier takes, like stuff where they were just doing crazy takes, throw like insane line deliveries, weird emphasis, shouting lines at one another. And they were like, yeah, we'll just see what sticks. I don't know. Sam might like it. It might turn out. So like he gets these wild takes in the film of him. Like he's got this like cackle laugh that's like really odd and like him fuming and screaming on the beach, like just lots of really crazy stuff. Lots of eaten gross bugs, which like, yeah, it's partly CGI, but like it's all like a big one take thing and him like spitting it out, throwing it up. It's good. And all of this is like a boiler pot for what you know is coming, where like these two are going to have it out by the end of a Raimi movie, right? It's going to get bloody somewhere along the way. And so as they kind of develop this relationship, you know things aren't quite right here. Things are not going to work out. And you keep wondering, like, if help is actually going to arrive. You know what I mean? Like, are they going to see a boat on the horizon? Is a plane going to come and save them? Or are they trapped here? It's good, man. It's a good couple hours of the movies. I had a ton of fun with this movie.
Yeah, it's really unpredictable, which I think was really interesting. Kept me guessing the whole time. The only criticism I think I would have is that there's some really kind of bad CGI in several parts. There's the part when she fights the boar, it kind of doesn't look great. There's also some very wide shots of like, you know, a helicopter over an island. It's like that's clearly a video game island that you created there. Some of the airplane stuff doesn't, I thought the stuff would get a little bit more gnarly, and that's my other criticism is I wanted him to go further. Like I wanted Raimi to get lean a little bit more in maybe the Misery direction. If you haven't seen Misery, that's a James Caan, Kathy Bates from the 90s, based on the Stephen King novel. Real gruesome stuff. I thought this would lean a little bit that way. It doesn't quite, but I think he could have gone there.
No, I'm with you. Like the plane crash tees us up for what's supposed to be a wild feature, and it turns out to be one of the more violent parts of the movie. Crazy stuff going on in that plane crash, too. I was laughing in my theater, and the couple down, like a few seats down from me, was like horrified. They were like silent. I was like, this is awesome. Yeah, I want to stand up and cheer. Like I said, I feel biased about Send Help. I feel biased because I feel like I knew what I was getting into. It's like I've done the homework or something and walked in and was like, I can't wait to be wowed by the next Sam Raimi R horror. But I also liked it a lot, and I feel like that's an honest opinion. Any other thoughts or recommendations?
No, I think I'm ready.
Would you recommend Send Help?
Definitely, especially for horror fans. If you're a fan of Sam Raimi and his work and you're familiar with it, you'll definitely enjoy this. Not for the squeamish, because there's definitely some gross out moments, a lot of blood and some stuff, but it's a lot of fun. Their chemistry or anti-chemistry is really good. They really hate each other, but they have to work together, that sort of thing. We have a lot of fun things along the way, a little bit of social, like workplace commentary going on. As well, and a great role for Rachel McAdams. Highly recommend.
Yeah, I recommend it as well. I had a ton of fun with this movie. Support original horror, man. Like, it's from a director who hasn't done it in a while. He's got some good city miles on him. He knows how to make a movie. It's cheap. It's effective. It's fast. It's a lot of fun. It's a small cast. Rachel McAdams, Dylan O'Brien, rock. Check out Send Help. Go see it in theater. Big screen if you can. It's a good time. Don't take your parents or anything. Like, go... Don't take anybody's gonna get freaked out. It's definitely a gore fest for sure, but it's a blast. We got to talk about trailers, upcoming stuff on the show that we're gonna do. Maybe. What do we call this segment, Andy?
It's time for the trailer park.
All
So we finally got a full trailer for The Devil Wears Prada 2, which comes out May 1st. And when we get what we did and what we didn't, because we got a teaser, and then I was like, oh, now we're going to get something that tells us a little bit more. And we just basically got a longer teaser that shows all our four main characters, Meryl Streep, Emily Blunt, Anne Hathaway, and Stanley Tucci all coming together. But we get like no plot, no setup, no where is everyone now. It's just kind of like, hey, everything is, it's 110% nostalgia bait. It's just like, hey, everything that you knew from the first one 20 years ago, it's all that again. And we just don't get anything about plot or story. So I don't really know what to think. I haven't seen the original. I really should go back and watch it because I've heard it's a classic. But yeah, we just didn't get anything to show us like, what is this movie actually going to be about? They're really riding high on that.
Yeah, in a minute, I'm going to tell you about the Michael trailer that we got after the Michael teaser, and that actually has a bit of plot in it. Like, I could definitely tell you, I think, what's going on in that movie. You're right, though. This is much more surface. I've seen people roasting the lighting on Twitter. Have you seen these memes? Lighting Twitter? Dude, like, people are comparing old photos, screen caps of the original movie and this one, and talking about how washed out the colors are and how it's flat and everything's lit with light boxes now, and it's just not the same. All that aside, it does definitely just look like nostalgia of the movie. I guess that's what it is, right? Like, it's not trying to be anything else. I guess Anne Hathaway is meeting her boss again. Her boss doesn't remember her, which is kind of funny. Emily Blunt shows up. Oh, we all used to work together. Like, maybe there's some kind of rivalry there. I'm really not sure.
Yeah, I was going to say that it does have a stacked cast. In addition to those main four players, we also have Sydney Sweeney, Justin Theroux, Kenneth Branagh, Lucy Liu, Lady Gaga, BJ Novak, one Caleb Herron even listed in the credits. So, impressive cast. We'll see. It's just, tell us what it's about. Give us a premise. Give us something.
Right.
Oh,
it's
my
a trailer.
God. Like,
come on.
I was like, I can't tell you what this movie's about.
Yeah. Well, all right. When does this come out? Devil Wears Prada 2?
This comes out that May 1st. I'm not super interested in
it. Probably skipping it.
Release. If this is the big release, we'll see it. But if there's something else on that's part of the summer blockbuster window.
Yeah,
so
yeah. We might miss it.
We'll see.
I have seen the first film on DVD for sure. I didn't catch it in theaters or anything, but like Rachel McAdams' Mean Girls, somewhere along the way, somebody's like, no, this movie's iconic. You should watch it. I remember liking it fine. Like Anne Hathaway, like Meryl Streep. I don't know. Yeah. I don't recall how much money it made, but it must have done good enough that somebody was like, hey man, we're making Devil Wears Prada 2. So, hey, whatever. May. All right. Devil Wears Prada. Keep it here for more. Next, we got to talk about the trailer for Michael. I know I've teed this up a couple times, but I did a little research on this because I wanted to make sure I'm coming informed. The last time I posted Michael content on the channel, I caught a bunch of comments about how I don't know what I'm talking about. YouTubers don't do any research. Well, nay, not today. So we have the trailer for Michael. All right. This is the Michael Jackson biopic from director Antoine Fuqua, Training Day, The Equalizer, Emancipation with Will Smith. This movie has been trapped in production hell. All right. It's been stuck, and I'm going to talk about it here in a second. But for what we're getting in this trailer, here's what we got. It opens like any other music biopic trailer. Huge concert crowd. All right. We got shots of Michael walking in. Right. We got the hair. We got the jacket. At 16 seconds into the trailer, we get the moonwalk. Cut to 30 years earlier. Joe Jackson, played by Coleman Domingo, is sitting at his table, surrounded by his kids that are going to become the Jackson 5, talking about how y'all don't want to work in a steel mill your whole lives, right? No, sir, we don't. Great. All of them are training and practicing and learning how to be musicians. It's going good, except one of them, Michael, wants to do his own thing. I just want to write my own music, he says. And then he starts doing his own thing. He meets their lawyer, played by, what's his name? Miles Teller, family Miles lawyer Teller, yeah. And co-executor of their estate, John Branca. And then Michael's got Grammys, and he's got sold-out venues and crowds and women that are fainting at concerts, right? But wait, his talent manager and father figure, Joe Jackson, wants to get his piece of the pie. So Michael has to do what he says or else. That's the movie, all right? We get some shots of Thriller. We get a shot of Michael waving to millions of people, fumbling more Grammys. We get the moonwalk again at 2 minutes in the trailer. His story in cinemas soon. Wikipedia says this movie's coming out April 24th. The trailer says soon. Apparently, there's no official marketing that says April 24th. I don't know where they got that from, but for what it's worth, it's a good weekend at the movies. The weekend before, we get Mother Mary from A24 and David Lowry.
That's right.
And then the weekend after, we get Devil Wears Prada, which we just covered, right? So there's nothing really going on April 24th weekend. Could be the Michael biopic. Andy, what do you think?
So this, again, we get to see more. I think this movie's probably going to do pretty well. Michael Jackson's music just is that popular. And we get to see the great Coleman Domingo as Joe Jackson, who was like a real bastard and like beat all the kids and was just the most miserable person ever. But it's also, well, I made Michael Jackson, so I obviously did something right. But so I think that's what excited me the most, was actually seeing Coleman Domingo in that role more than like the actual Michael Jackson stuff. It'll be fine. Like I said, it's stopping at like 1988, 1990. To avoid any of the controversial stuff.
Yeah.
So it's kind of sidestepping that period conveniently. It's probably going to make $1 billion. Like, it's going to do really well.
Yeah, let me tell you about that controversy I was talking about. So this movie has been trapped in production hell. Guardian put out a report last year that Michael was originally supposed to come out in April 2025. So last year, this movie was supposed to come out. But then it got stuck because one of Jackson's accusers apparently is in the film, like not the person, but a character representing them. And due to some stuff that happened in court, that cannot be shown in any way in a cinematic way. So the Jackson estate stepped in, said, you can't do this. They scheduled reshoots and they added another 22 days of reshoots. They pushed the film back. At one point, there was talk of this being a part one and part two. And they were going to end this one in like 1980 and put Thriller and the other stuff in part two. Now, here's the thing. I don't have any evidence that this isn't a part one. I don't have anything that says this is not part one. In fact, the tagline at the end of this trailer says his story begins soon in theaters. It doesn't say this is his story. It's just like, this is the beginning. It's probably the whole thing. They show the Thriller clip in here, right? So it's probably just one movie and they're not doing two parts. I cannot imagine trying to tease audiences back for the second half of the Michael Jackson story. Come back next summer to find out how it ends. Like, there's no way. There's no way. Like, I don't know what they filmed in regards to his accusers. I don't know what the plan was. Cut all that. Lose it. Make this one movie. Put it out in April. I think Andy's right. I think you make a bunch of money. Great. You know what I mean? That would be the move. If I was Antoine Fuqua and I had to pivot, like apparently he's pivoting, that's what I would do.
Yeah, that's probably going to be the movie. It's like the Bohemian Rhapsody story. I guess just Bohemian Rhapsody, where it conveniently ends in 1985, and it's like they toured for another 8 years. It's like Freddie Mercury lived longer than that. They're just stopping at a very convenient point. But at the same time, if they can find a way to continue basically doing more songs, like I can see them, like if this is super successful, I can see them being like, well, we're gonna do the second half, and it's gonna be like Dune, where at the end it's like Michael part one, it comes up at the very end.
God, come back next summer. Like, I just, like, there's no way. But like, it would be so funny if this ended with like a Horizon part one trailer at the end, where it's like a montage of stuff to come, and that's when you see that Thriller shot. Because like, again, according to Guardian a year ago, this was a part one, part two, and this is where it's going. And looking at what I got here, I'm like, I don't know, this isn't a part one. It would be crazy. Also, I definitely wanted to rip on Joe Jackson beating the hell out of his kids with switches and whips. That is something Michael went on Oprah in 1993 and talked about that, all right? He also later said it was okay, but like even Joe Jackson said he hit his kids. So like, I think it's okay for us to rip on the latest state of Joe Jackson Esquire and say that he was beating his kids, because he was, you know. They should have Coleman Domingo in boxing gloves in this movie, just smack him around, you know what I mean? Like, how dare you sing in anyway.
Oh my God.
That's the Michael trailer. I know. I gotta stop ripping on Joe Jackson. That's the Michael trailer. We got to move on. We got one more to talk about. Please take it away.
Yes, please. We have one more.
Full
trailer for The Drama came out. This teaser came out, but I don't think we did. We talked about it. This is a new A24 feature starring Zendaya and Robert Pattinson as a young couple who are engaged. Their wedding is coming up. And then at some point, something is revealed. They're sitting at a table with one Alana Haim and Mamadou Athi, who was in Poor Things. And they're just kind of talking about different things, and I won't spoil it, but something is revealed that makes everyone look at Zendaya's character like, whoa, Hey. And that's apparently this is like a big secret. I think this might be based on a book. It's like a big secret,
like a
but
Reddit thread or Twitter thread or something. Yeah. Like not even it's something really simple.
But so whatever this big horrific thing that's kind of a secret now and is eventually revealed, and it changes the entire dynamic of their relationship, her relationship with their friends. I think this looks really interesting. Like I said, I was surprised to see Alana Haim is in this movie, in a pretty big role. So I think that's one, you know, what is the secret? What is the drama? And then the fallout. I don't think the secret is as big of a deal as like, what is the reaction to it? How does everyone... How does that affect the rest of their lives and their upcoming marriage and that? So this looks interesting. This is coming out April 3rd. So we'll definitely check it out.
Yeah. The only big drama around the drama is whatever the secret is at the middle of it. And like every time I read anything about this movie, the comments are all like, stop scrolling. Don't look anymore. Cause somebody will just openly spoil whatever the thing is at the center of this. And it will ruin the movie for you. I don't know that. Obviously, the movie's not about the thing that happens. It's about the drama around it, right? That's the title. That's what they're going for. And that's the tone in the trailer. Like, it's all of them talking about this big stress and expressing, like, these feelings of insecurity and unknowing going into a situation where you thought you knew the stakes. And now things have changed a little bit. And it's personal, and Zendaya's character is obviously suffering it. That being said, I am terrified I'm going to trip over the landmine that is the spoiler for this movie, like on the internet somewhere. Maybe it came from a book. I don't know for sure. Like I haven't looked into it too far. Cause every time I start scrolling, people are like, stop, go back. Don't look at whatever it came from. But apparently it's some kind of real, easily findable thing that happened. And then somebody picked up the rights to make a movie and then A24 is distributing it. And that's where we are. But Rob Pattinson, Zendaya, looks like a fun time. I don't know, whatever. 90 minutes of the movies, right? I'll get my popcorn. Maybe I'll bring a friend. Hey, it could be fine, I think. Drama looks fine. Maybe stressful, but fine. When does this come out?
April 3rd.
April 3rd. All right. Keep it on Oscar for more. With that, we are jumping to our last film of the episode. I'm going to be taking a summary on this one, so please excuse me, funny delivery. The movie is The Wrecking Crew. So, The Wrecking Crew is the new Amazon Prime streamer. Just came out this weekend, starring Jason Momoa and Dave Bautista as two brothers, kind of a buddy cop action film from Blue Beetle director Angel Manuel Soto, starring Jason Momoa and Bautista. Bautista plays a by-the-book U.S. Navy SEAL instructor, James Halley, and Momoa plays his goofy brother and comedy counterpart, suspended police detective Johnny from Oklahoma. Early in the movie, the two brothers learn of their father's passing in Hawaii in an untimely hit and run that the film opens with. And upon investigating, stumble into a sort of a large deal gone wrong in Hawaii on the island. Something quite nefarious involving gangsters and Japanese Yakuza and a real estate billionaire and maybe even a casino being built on top of ancestral Hawaiian family lands. So from here, the brothers have to contend with gang members and crooked cops and Yakuza and all kinds of things, maybe even one another, to ultimately find resolution, find out what happened, and bring justice to their father and the island of Hawaii. Man, I actually really liked the first third of this movie okay, and then I really fell off with it. I struggled. I'm looking forward to talking about it. Andy, what did you think of The Wrecking Crew?
The parts of this work, parts of it don't. It feels like a little bit of a buddy cop Miami Vice thing. I think I think our leads are good. Bautista and Jason Momoa they're fun together. They got this kind of a good cop, bad cop thing going on. Momoa's really, really funny. He has a lot of jokes throughout this movie. They really work. He gets to do a lot of like beat 'em up kind of stuff. But it's also kind of slow in a lot of parts. It feels like a TV episode. It feels like an episode of Law and Order where they're just like, let's go talk to the gangster, and then let's go talk to the police detective, and then let's go talk to this other person. And then you have some big action things. And the action is a little bit too big sometimes. Like there's a whole thing with like a helicopter highway chase, but it all just looks like a video game cutscene. And it's like, what are we doing here, guys? It's very predictable. It's very... like I said, it's up and down. It's up and down. parts of it work. A lot of it does. I had to watch it in basically two parts. Cause like I said, I would totally watch a TV show with these two because they are funny. Bautista's the more like buttoned up, like military guy, more disciplined. Momoa's the more loose cannon that doesn't play by the rules, that sort of thing, but he gets the job done. So it's a good dynamic.
It's funny when this movie started, I was thinking of the movie, because it opens on Batista's character. That's kind of the first one we get our look at, the more serious of the two, James. And I was thinking of the movie Stuber from a couple years ago, which was a little known buddy cop kind of comedy that came out in January, starring Dave Bautista as like this big unruly guy, a detective, and Kumail Nanjiani as an Uber driver named Stu. And Batista hops in the back of Kumail Nanjiani's car, and Kumail Nanjiani's mostly the straight shooter in that movie. Like, that's how buddy cop movies usually go, right? You got your straight shooter, and then you got your comedy whack job. And in that movie, Batista's the comic wacko, and it works all right. I like Batista fine. He's a big chunky dude. Like, he's got pretty good comedy chops. And so this movie starts, and he is not at all funny. It all, totally the opposite way. He's playing it straight. He's a serious guy. He's a former Navy SEAL, now instructor. Like, That is where he's coming at this movie from. And then we get to Momoa, who is genuinely funny. Like, he was funny at the in the last Fast and Furious movie, and that was the first time I'd see him be funny. But that was really physical. His character doesn't have that many lines. It's mostly him just like running around like the Joker and like cackling and like getting on a walkie-talkie and being like, blow up Vin Diesel. Like, you know, it's fine. It's a Fast and Furious movie. But in this movie, he's like down on his luck, suspended police detective in Oklahoma, Johnny, and he's like really funny. Like, the first action scene we get of him, he's just been broken up with his girlfriend, played by Mirena Baccarin, and he's a little hammered, and some gangsters show up at his house while he's on the phone, and he has to beat him up while half naked. And it's like a great action sequence. It's mostly practical. Like, it's stuntmen like getting thrown through plate glass windows, and it's Momoa doing it and being funny and landing lines. And I'm like, okay, all right, this is good. And so he heads to Hawaii and he meets his brother. And that is where the movie just becomes absolute slop. Oh my God. It's get out your phone, get up and do your laundry. You don't care what's going on. The mystery happening at the center of the Wrecking Crew is so bad. It's awful. Like, it is not interesting. I thought I'd give away a little bit more of it in the overview here, but I figure, you know, somebody's going to roast me for giving away the movie. So it's fine. Like, it is so uninteresting. And the two of them have like this sordid past that they just talk about. They never show us any flashbacks or anything. We never get a look back at that time Batista left Jason Momoa's character out in the rain or whatever. It's just a whole lot of like, you left me out there. How could you? And you just don't care. Like, it just does not. It just falls apart.
Yeah, the plot is entirely predictable. You know, their father is not so mysteriously killed. There's a big conspiracy that they're slowly uncovering. When the revelations come, it's not a surprise to anyone. You know, like, you can call who's gonna die way up ahead. Also, this movie is not so blatant propaganda as well. Just like The Rip last week, there's a part where they go to talk to Steven Root, who's playing the detective, and then he's like, well, you know, I got to investigate 50 other hit and runs. That's why I can't investigate yours. If we had more funding, if only we had more funding and could have more cops, they would, you know, we could solve all these crimes. So it's doing that thing again, just like last week. Again, Batista's character is from the military as well. So that's, I just kind of rolled my eyes at that. Oh yeah, Momoa's character is on like administrative leave because he, for excessive force. And when it's revealed, he's like, well, I shot a meth dealer, but he was dealing to kids in the park. And it's like, that's still not okay, man. Like, what do we do? I don't know. Again, this is not this. Last week it was Netflix. This week it's Amazon Prime. They're both kind of doing the same thing, and it's also doing that streaming thing where the dialogue is real on the nose, real narrating what's happening on screen, so you don't have to really look up a lot.
It's a shame because this is coming from director Angel Manuel Soto, who did Blue Beetle, and I remember being warm on Blue Beetle. Like, I didn't think I would like Blue Beetle going into it. It just seemed like another comic movie. It was in that weird space where DC had kind of just wrapped with Zack Snyder and James Gunn was coming in, and they were like, oh, it's still part of the universe or whatever. That all seemed complicated. Then I go see it and was like, actually a pretty good time. Not a great comic book movie, but like certainly a humble, solid attempt. Good action, good comedy. And this has a lot of that same DNA woven into it, but a lot of it just doesn't work is good. Like the CGI stuff is chunky in bits. Andy mentioned that helicopter like freeway scene that is like so bad you should have just rewritten it or something. Like there needed to be a different way at it. There are some scenes that work. That opening scene with Mo is solid. There's a scene where they blow up a car about halfway through the movie. It's pretty good. There is a big nod to Park Chan-wook's Old Boy in a hallway fight scene towards the end of Batista, which I'll be honest, shouldn't work. Still does a little bit, man. I still get a big stupid grin on my face every time I see one. I'm just like, all right, yeah, here it is. Here's Old Boy. And it's one of the best parts of the movie. And that's because of a director who's not a part of it, right? Like, it's because it's lifting somebody else's technique. It just gets real chunky and it's like 2 hours. It's too long for what it is. It starts out strong, but like you will get your phone out. You will not make it through the Wrecking Crew without you being not, bored on your couch. Yeah, it demands phone engagement to get all the way through. Dialogue's really good. I should say MMO is really funny. Like a lot of real world references, which is weird. Naruto and Dragon Ball. Steven Root says you guys just look like you ate a stack of steroid pancakes. Like there's some goofy digs in there at Momoa and Batista that I think work well and will help you stay locked in for the better parts of the action. But like, you're just going to get bored.
I was going to say, it also features some familiar players, Jacob Batalon, who you might know from the Spider-Man films, the newer ones, is in it as a character named Pika. And again, it's all like cop procedural stuff where he's like, oh, well, I was working for your dad and I was trying to unlock this. He's the additional comic relief in addition to Momoa's comic relief. There's some funny scenes there. Tamara Morrison, who was in the Book of Boba Fett, is I don't know why he's in this movie.
I think he's their uncle or something. Yeah.
He kind of gives away the plot. When you see him, you instantly know where the plot is going. Of course, Marina Baccarin is in this as well. So we have some nice, you know, cameos like that. But like I said, it's just so rote. And like I said, this would make a great TV show.
Yeah. I remember thinking that watching it. Here I am saying like, it's too long. But honestly, if you split it up, tightened it a bit and made it like 6 episodes or something with maybe a lean on a season 2, like I think Batista and Momoa could carry a show for sure. I think they could absolutely do that. I know like Momoa is at least on a lot of television over at Apple. Like, I think the big win for this movie for me, the thing Wrecking Crew does well is it is genuinely a showcase for how funny Jason Momoa can be. I did not expect him to be funny. It works. It works great. He's really fantastic. Batista's a little stiff, you know, and he's looking leaner now since he's off the juice, or he's on less juice. So that's that. Jacob Batalon is a big, I just don't think his character brings much to what's happening.
I feel like he's never going to get anything after Spider-Man.
I want to say, for what it's worth, I did some research. He's native to Hawaii. He was so stoked that a lot of this was shooting in Hawaii, like with local groups. He was excited to be a part of it. Like, he was championing the whole thing. Respect for sure. His character doesn't have a lot to do here. Like, he's not funnier than Momoa for sure. Like, he's just kind of the guy who's got the hookup sometimes. Oh yeah, I can get you in because I know a guy who works in catering for this party, you know, like he's fine. Marina Baccarin's fine. Steven Root's got like 4 scenes. Tamara Morrison's got like 4 scenes. You know what I mean? Everybody gets a little bit of time. It's fine. I think this will work for Amazon. I do want to say this will get clicks. People will click on this. You will get ad dollars. I think I had to watch 11 minutes of ads or something. And anytime I paused it, 9 ads came up on screen for Beast Games. You know what I mean? And Gillette razors. So they'll make their money on this. Like, it's fine. This is not an L for sure. Like, I think it's good for the platform, but like, boy, no one's going to be talking about this movie any time in the future. This will be lost to the sands of
time. It's content.
Like, this is just going to get, yes, it's content for sure. It's a content movie.
Yeah. Like I said, it fits that same Netflix formula of put it on the background. The dialogue kind of doesn't make sense. There are some decent action scenes. Jason Momoa actually has a good action scene pretty early in the film, like 15 minutes in. There's this, like, guys come to his house and try to kill him, and he beats them all up. That's a really great scene because it's so small. It's when it tries to do this, like, I mean, like Fast and Furious esque kind of highway scenes where there's all these cars on fire and a helicopter with guns. And I was just like, what movie is this? Like, where did this come from? It's really bizarre.
Yeah, really strange. Anyway, like, it's lofty. It wants to do big things. Sometimes it gets there. Andy, would you recommend The Wrecking Crew?
I'm going to say soft pass on this. It's streaming slop. It's content for the weekend. This movie's going to disappear after a week. Our leads are good. Jason Momoa is really funny. But it's real slow. It's too long. It's a full 2 hours. It's a cop procedural, and the slow scenes don't really work a lot of times. Some action's okay. Put it on in the background.
Yeah, big skip. You don't need to watch this movie. It's fine. If you want some action, something. Maybe if you're a big Jason Momoa, Dave Bautista fan, like you can see the two of them pop off sometimes. There's some decent action in it, I guess. Momoa's funny. That's the big takeaway from this movie. Jason Momoa is funny. Jason Momoa should get more comedy roles. Maybe like a Momoa Cena performance. I don't know if you can have two funny buddy cops in a buddy cop movie, but like, I think there's something there. He's good. They're both good. That's The Wrecking Crew. That's the episode. Episode 324. Good God, of Off-Script Film Review. Andy, what are we watching next week?
So we are going to be taking a look at Charlie XCX's The Moment, the mockumentary written by Aiden. Oh, I can't remember his last name. We're going to see what this is all about. We've heard some good things, some early positive reviews. We're going to be checking that out next week. And then TBA, we'll see what else is out, see what else is out to stream. One FYI release, Dracula, another interpretation of Dracula is out this week by French director Luc Besson, starring Caleb Landry Jones as Dracula. I don't really know. The great Christoph Waltz is in it. Oscar winner Christoph Waltz is in this really bad looking Dracula movie. That's also out. But we're going to be taking a look at The Moment and some other things that we'll be looking forward to this month. Wuthering Heights on the 13th, How to Make a Killing on February 20th, and possibly Scream 7 at the end of the month.
If you enjoyed the show today, if you like what we're doing here on Off-Script, the easiest way to support us is just subscribe to the show. Like or comment where you can. That'd be helpful as well. But if you subscribe to us on YouTube, where we post our video episodes, on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, iHeartMedia, where our audio episodes are, that would be a huge help. I swear it moves us up in the algo or whatever. The almighty algorithm sees engagement and goes, okay, we should put this out in front of more people. It's a big deal. Helps us out a lot. So check us out on social media, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram. Again, check out that YouTube page. A lot of cool stuff going on over there. And check out our website, offscriptfilmreview.com. Email us correspondence directly right into the show at mail@offscriptfilmreview.com. I'm starting to think maybe I should put in the right of the show thing earlier in the episode, because I've had a couple people ask about, hey, can you talk about this in the podcast? Can you, you know, maybe you can cover this. And every time I'm like, write into the show. Please write in. We will do it. We'll read it live. You can have your own segment, man. If it's good, we'll make a thumbnail and post it. And no, people are like, how? Where do I write in? mail@offscriptfilmreview.com. We say it at the end of every episode. Come on. I know it's way at the end and people stop listening before you get to this part. But if you listen to this part, that's when you get the cool stuff, right? The cool hidden extra content stuff. People pay lots of money for that kind of thing on big brands. Here you get it for nothing. You just get to hang out. That's all. So write into the show, mail@offscriptfilmreview.com. From all of us at Offscript, the home of bold cinema, I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
Thanks for watching.